Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable. Very nice to have you on the program. Sir Ken Robinson is a highly respected and a global leader in educational transformation, as well as being a New York Times bestselling author. The name of his new book is You, Your Child, and School, Navigate Your Way to the Best Education. The book is published by Viking, and it's a great pleasure to welcome back to our program Sir Ken Robinson. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me back.
Always nice to have you on the program. So what brought you to this topic? I should note for people who have not seen the cover of the book, there is a compass on it, and the subtitle is Navigate Your Way to the Best Education. What is important to know in that navigation?
Well, I wrote the book, Joe, because I'm a parent, and I've been in education a long time, and I know that parents are increasingly concerned about whether the education their children are getting is the best one for them in our current circumstances, and also whether it's really paying proper attention to their natural talents and abilities. And so I wanted to offer some information that parents would find helpful about that, give them a sense of what the issues and challenges are and what their options and strategies might be.
So when it comes to the challenges, let's begin there. So when it comes to education and it comes to school and it comes to kids and it comes to parents, what are the challenges for, let us begin with the kids themselves of what the challenges that the schools present?
Well, you know, anybody listening to this with children, I guess that'd be an awful lot of people, if they have two or more, I'll make them a bet, and I will win this bet. I'm confident of it. If you've got two or more kids, I bet you they're completely different from each other. And they are. You know, I mean, I have two children. They are very different. I mean, they have certain characteristics in common, of course, you know, with the part of our family and their brother and sister. But you would never confuse them. Nobody would ever confuse their children for anybody else, because every child is unique and has their own interests and personality and disposition. So one of the points I want to make in the book is, as parents, we need to make sure that education takes account of the individual differences for our children. And one of the problems is that education has always, I mean, I'm generalized, of course. There have always been wonderful schools in all systems. But overall, education tends to focus on a particular type of ability. There's a particular view of intelligence that runs through most education systems, and it doesn't always take proper account of how diverse and wonderful and multifaceted our young people's abilities really are. So that's the first thing. You need to look at your own child. Secondly, one of the challenges is that education has become a bit of a political football over the past 20 years. It's become the center of all kinds of initiatives and controversies. There are new choices being made all the time. There are voucher schemes, charter schools, there are magnet schools. There's a lot of testing and pressure of testing and competition. Testing has become a multi-billion dollar industry, a lot of pressure to get to college. A lot of programs have gone by the board. A lot of vocational programs that people used to be used to aren't there anymore. And schools are caught up in this too. I mean, the book is not in any way a criticism of schools or teachers, on the contrary. But it's a difficult field for people to navigate their way around now. And so one of the other purpose of the book is to set out what's going on here in education so that parents can, at least if they're not involved in it professionally, get a clearer sense of what the issues are, and then to look at, well, what do we do about it, you know, where you are, what are your options as a parent in whatever your circumstances happen to be.
I'm interested in your standards and how you frame this, which is, so when you're looking at what you consider to be a great teacher, what makes a good teacher a great teacher?
Well, can I ask you, did you remember your own teachers at school?
Absolutely. Well, some of them, yes.
Who stands out for you?
I had one by the name of Dr. Lorraine Romito. And she was it was an English teacher and also in the field of communications. And she was lovely. She was giving. She always had a smile on her face, and she seemed like she actually cared about me.
Yeah. That's a wonderful way to put it. But you see, teaching is a relationship. You know, I think people oversimplify teaching. That sometimes you hear politicians saying this, that there's a kind of view that to be a good teacher, you just need to have a degree in a discipline and know your stuff and be well qualified. Well, it is important that teachers know what it is they're teaching, clearly. I'm not arguing other than that. But there are plenty of people who are very well versed in their own discipline who aren't good teachers, who can't inspire people. And the role of a teacher is to facilitate learning. It's a very simple way to put it, but it's a complicated job. And it's not just knowing your stuff, it's infusing other people with it. But also teaching, like parenting, is a relationship. There are some teachers that we just get on with, and just as you just said with your teacher there, somebody who recognizes you and adjusts the way they teach to the people they're teaching and makes it personal. I can think of it absolutely in my own life. I mentioned some of them in the book, teachers who impressed me in all kinds of ways. Not actually always because I got on with them, but because there was something about them that I found intriguing, or they were lit up by a particular enthusiasm. They had a way of getting ideas across. You know, the difference between a good teacher and a not good teacher can be considerable in how well students do at school. The other thing is, of course, that the teacher who may be great with one person may not be so great with somebody else, right? Because it's a relationship. So, yes, looking at how well your kids are getting on with the teachers is an important part. And I do have a whole section in the book about the need for parents to be, you know, to have a constructive partnership with schools and with the teachers as well. Not an interfering one. You know, there's a fine line here always, isn't there? You don't want people zooming into the school, you know, so-called helicopter parents who show up in an outrage every time the child slips a grade. I mean, that's not very helpful to anybody. But at least having a constructive relationship is an important part of this partnership.
How much choice do we have? How much choice do we have as parents and as kids of the schools that we go to? If we're looking at our public school of where we live, that can be limited, right? And even the teachers that teach our children, how much choice do we have over that? And is that a flaw, or is that something that allows us to get involved so that at least we know what the situation is?
Yeah, well, at face value, these days, if you look at the system overall, there appears to be more choice. There has been a move in recent years, and of course the current Secretary for Education, Betsy DeVos, is a great advocate of charter schools. I mean, charter schools are a very interesting case. There are some great charter schools, no question about it. I mean, I've been to them, and I know people who started charter schools, and some of them are great, and they may be built around a particular set of disciplines or a particular approach to teaching and learning, or that they may be designed to meet the needs of a particular community or section of the community. And some of them are very, really, very good. And equally, there are some terrible charter schools which have been set up and not work very well. They are driven in part by a profit motive, and some have closed and come and gone. My point about it is that there's nothing in the nature of charter schools that guarantees they're either good or bad. It depends who's running them. Like everything else, it's like in a restaurant. There's nothing in the nature of a restaurant that makes it a good or a bad place. It depends entirely who's running it, what's on the menu, and how good the chef is. There's nothing automatic about it. There are wonderful public schools, and of course there's some poor public schools. There are great private schools and some terrible ones. So what I argue in the book is that for parents who are faced with a choice, I'll come back to the ones who may not feel they've got a choice in a minute, but where parents have a choice, it's important to think, well, what counts as a good education? It's not the constitution of the place, you know, legally, it's what goes on there that matters. And it's not just about test scores. It's not about how many kids go to the Ivy League as a consequence. Because what happens to our kids in the future has everything to do with the quality of what's happening to them here and now. So I talk about the elements of excellence in the book, about the curriculum, about the nature of it and the balance of it, about the quality of teaching, about assessment, the overall culture. So I've tried to give some guidelines there about what would count as an excellent education, whoever happens to be providing it. There are issues around this evident choice. The fact is, it's often more illusory than real. Because even if you get a really good charter school opening up somewhere, which may be great in itself, the evidence is that it may excite a lot of competition to get places, but not everybody's going to be able to go anyhow. And, of course, charter schools are partly funded from taxation. They are effectively independent, publicly funded schools in some respects. So sometimes the effect can be to take resources away from the public school system. I'm personally a great defender of public education, and the truth is, at the moment, the vast majority of kids do go to public schools, and I think politically we should be focused on improving them, because it's often very difficult to provide the kinds of education that kids really need if the resources aren't available. I mean, the resources for good teaching and so on. So it's often the case that the best option for kids, actually it's not the best option, it's the only option, it's the local public school. And I think that the growth of public schools and education has been one of the crowning achievements, you know, of America's rise over the past 200 years. And I think it's very important that we support them properly.
You work on this topic globally, and as our time draws to a close, I'm curious as to, are there indeed global problems? I mean, the problems that you talk about in the book, obviously we're struggling with these in the United States, but are they struggling with those in England? Are they struggling with those elsewhere in Europe and other countries?
Well, absolutely. I ought to say, Joe, by the way, that in case it's not clear to people listening, I live in America. I live in L.A. I've lived here for nearly 18 years. So, you know, I'm not calling it from some leafy suburb, you know, outside of London. But I live here, and absolutely, you know, we've been here a long time, and there are challenges here. There are wonderful schools here as well, of course. I mean, I'm not speaking criticism of schools. I wrote the book because I know parents have a genuine perplexity about this, and some of them don't have a choice. And what I'm arguing is actually there are more choices than there may appear to be. That's why I wrote the book in the way that I have. I hope it will be a great practical help to parents who are dealing with the sorts of issues we've faced as well. But to answer your question directly, all countries are going through these transformational processes in education. It's certainly true in Europe. It's certainly true in England and the rest of the UK. I'm heading off tomorrow to Australia and New Zealand, and they have exactly the same issues there. China, Southeast Asia as a whole, is going through its own ructions, trying to figure out the best way to educate their children. The reason for it is that the world is changing so rapidly. One of the ways to think about this is that education has to have some constant principles, because children haven't changed that much. And there are some things which always constitute a good education, and I want to be helpful to parents in thinking about what that is. But also, it's true that the kind of education we had as kids may not be the best for our own children now as they face this very uncertain future. You know, we've seen a big change in the world in the past generation with the development of digital technology and the impact of social media, which is both good and bad for our kids. It's nothing, I think, to what's coming down the track if artificial intelligence lives up to even a fraction of our current expectations. It's going to have a big change on the way we live, the way we work, and the way we connect to each other. So it's a very good time for parents to think about some of the bigger changes going on, as well as looking very locally at what they can do today and tomorrow for their own children.
Sir Ken Robinson's new book is You, Your Child, and School, Navigating Your Way to the Best Education. The book is published by Viking. Thank you very much. It's always a great pleasure to have you on our program.
Always a pleasure. Thank you very much, Joe.
Thank you very much. Again, Sir Ken Robinson's new book is You, Your Child, and School. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.